Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Yesaṃ kāre tesaṃ upassamo sukho ti. This is so marvelous to be on retreat at last. A time when certainly my burdens are lessening, and when your external burdens are lessen, just the internal energies come up, the mind starts to concentrate, starts to get into energy and happiness, the mind starts to bliss out, and it's great. But it's not just for the sake of enjoying the deep states of samadhi that we meditate. It's also for the understanding, the deep insights which come from that. And last week I started talking about the insight, the wisdom which actually teaches samadhi. So we don't just go at this practice of meditation just with willpower. It's wisdom power is paramount. In fact, the willpower usually goes in the wrong direction. Goes in the direction of controlling, doing, making. It enhances the ego, makes it stronger, rather than allows the ego to fade away, to disappear. Because it's in the fading away of the ego, it's the fading away of the controller. When you disappear, when you literally die for these few moments of deep meditation, that you understand both the path of Buddhism and the reason why we have such suttas as the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. That sutta just completely spins me out every time. It is to tell you that whether it's any of the five khandhas, your body, your mind, the thoughts, the mental states, the consciousness, the feelings, whatever, if they're not part of you, they're not yours, you can't do anything about them. So you just leave it alone. If that's not telling you with a big neon sign to let go, I don't know what is. So you disengage. You stop controlling these things and everything just comes together. But the point is we don't know how to let go. We don't know how to disengage. We don't know how to give up this controller because we've been doing this for so many lifetimes. So this evening's talk, I was going to talk about these hindrances. I made a little joke to Venerable Bhamani, sorry, Ajahn Bhamani now, about tonight's talk will be on the six hindrances. The five hindrances plus the computer is number six. But maybe I'll put that aside, because the five hindrances is the most important ones. And you've heard me focus on this before, but I want to stress this once again, that where those hindrances live is important to know. Because sometimes that we try and develop our meditation practice and it doesn't work literally because we're looking in the wrong spot. We can't see where the problem really lies. And because of that we work, we meditate, we do things, we put in the hours, we try and inspire ourselves, we do everything, but it's not working. We wonder why, and this is one of the reasons. In the first part of any rains retreat like this, I just have to focus on meditation to get that meditation really buzzing along. So you're getting peaceful, you're getting blissed, you're enjoying the solitude. And if you get that meditation buzzing along, then just the rest takes care of itself, basically. Focus on this meditation again and again and again, not just through theory, because this is the essence of Buddhism. Just last night I went to give a talk and it was this like theological group. And just they gave me a book afterwards, I just flipped through it today. And there's an amount of thinking which goes on in theology. Even in Buddhist theology, where we have arguments about the finer points of the Vinaya, or the finer points of Abhidharma, or the finer points of the Dhamma. I mean, just get the mind still first of all. Put that aside. Stop thinking. Basically, and listen and feel and know what happens when this mind stops moving. And if you can understand what it's like to have a mind which is still, which stops moving, which is bright and brilliant, then that gives you the understanding of what the Dhamma truly is. And you find out that all of the thinking, actually all the reading, all the figuring out which you've done, all the great insights which you thought were valid, just all crumble away just under the power of direct personal experience, of stillness, of Dhamma, of things disappearing, under the direct experience of anicca, dukkha, anatta, and sunyata as well, of seeing just the things have disappeared, of seeing what really is suffering, and what, when it ends, gives you this beautiful freedom of bliss, like being released from a prison. And just how this has nothing to do with the self, with me at all. There's nobody here, absolutely. And just the whole thing is this beautiful emptiness, this nothingness there. Oh joy that there's nothing. And once you actually start to see these as personal experiences, not only does it sort of empower the mind with bliss, with energy, it gives you the enormous powerful insights, and it's that wisdom, not the thinking wisdom, but the experiential wisdom, what sometimes in the West we call the gut wisdom. That is what empowers the meditation. As you start to see this more and more, it just, the mind just goes through it more and more. You don't decide to do it, which is an amazing realization. It just happens as a natural course. Which is why I want to give you encouragement this evening. Doesn't matter what's happened so far. Just keep on going. It's not up to you. So don't get disappointed or frustrated. Don't get encouraged or sort of exhilarated because of your success. It's nothing to do with you. So just don't even judge or make any failures or successes something personal to you during this retreat time. You're just like this person on a journey, and you're not driving the bus. The Buddha's driving this bus. You're just passengers on this journey. So remember that. So don't think, ah, look, I'm going through great scenery. Ah, this is terrible stuff I'm going through. Don't think, take it personally. Don't think it's you who are not doing things right, or you who are doing things right. Leave all that aside and just let go. As the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta said, all these things, if they really were yours, you'd be able to say, oh, my meditation be peaceful straight away, every time. Oh, my get jhana. Oh, my become enlightened. That is completely the wrong direction. And you know it's the wrong direction when you understand where these five hindrances live. The basic path of the Buddha, what he actually taught, what you're supposed to do, is explained very often in the suttas as abandoning the five hindrances, gaining the jhanas, and seeing the Dhamma. If you want to actually understand what Buddhism is in brief, not just the lay Buddhism, not just the two bad bricks and the door of my heart's open to you type Buddhism, but I mean the sort of the deep stuff. All it is about is abandon five hindrances, gain jhanas, see Dhamma, become enlightened. That easy. And that simple. But it's getting the five hindrances out of the way, first of all, which is the difficult part. And to get those five hindrances out of the way, you have to understand where they live. And this is that beautiful teaching of having like a paradigm, having like a framework, having like a way of looking, which actually can focus on the place where the five hindrances look. This is only just one way out of many of looking at the mind, but it is a useful one because it works. And it's a looking at the knower, the jitta, if you like, the objects of the mind, what you're experiencing, and what lies in between. This is the relationship model. And this is actually where one looks at not the breath, not the body, if you're doing body contemplation. Not the buddho, if you're doing the mantra buddho, breathing in buddh, breathing out toe. It's not just watching the feet when you're doing walking meditation. It's looking at what's between this knower and that object. What's actually between this jitta, this knower, and your breathing? What's between you and the body? What's between you and the chanting? What's between you and the eating? What's between you and the pain of your body? What's between you and your relationships in this monastery? What's between you and the broom when you're sweeping? That's what we really want to look at. Because it becomes quite clear when you know how to meditate that that's where the problems lie and that's where the solutions are found. You can be watching the breath, and the breath is there, moment after moment after moment. It doesn't disappear, but still you can't take it deeper into the beautiful breath, into the nimittas, into the jhanas. Why? Because you've got the breath, but you're looking at it in the wrong way. You're holding it. You're holding it with craving or with ill will or with fear. That is the problem. It's not that you have to just hold the breath and think that that's all, then everything's going to happen. It's how you're holding the breath. Remember what those five hindrances are. So the sensory desire, the ill will, the sloth and torpor, the restlessness and worry, or remorse rather, and the doubt. Each one of these is actually what lies in between you and the object. This is where we have to look. So it doesn't matter what's happening in your body. It's if you want it. It doesn't matter if there's a sound happening outside. It's whether you're interested in it. It's always a great contemplation when you're sitting outside. Why are we always disturbed by those noises? We're sitting in a dharamsala just before the meal. Why does the mind listen to the sound of the lay people downstairs? When you do listen to it, it's a bunch of old rubbish they're talking. But why does our mind go out and listen to it? And it's because of sensory desire, that's why. We want to know. That sensory desire is very much caught up with our attachment to our body. That's why we can't let go of the physical feelings in our body. That's why we can't let go of the sound. That's why that even some people, when they're meditating, they're afraid to close their eyes. They're literally attached to seeing things. By attachment, I mean they think this is so important to their survival, to their sense of being, to their sense of self. They feel that to not hear means that some part of their essential being disappears. As if they're not really there when they're not listening. There's something different, something vanished, something been stolen from them. Remember, all fear comes from when what we're attached to, what we cling on to, gets taken away from us or gets threatened to be taken away from us. Fear is always a sign of attachment. So that's why fear is good in Buddhism. It's a place where insight will soon arise if you investigate what am I afraid of letting go. And that's right in the middle between you and what you're experiencing. So if there is a sound, don't worry about the sound. Put some attention in what your relationship is with that sound. Why are you interested in it? Which is what's between you. Don't worry about the sound itself. Don't worry about you, oh, I'm not being mindful or whatever. Don't think of even about that. Look at how you're reacting to that sound. If you react without the hindrances, especially without those first two, without desire, without ill will, because you don't react to it, you don't do anything with it, just the mind disengages. The whole thing disappears. But when you react to the sound, they shouldn't be making so much noise, they shouldn't come that late, they should come through this door, not that door. Why do people make so much clunky, clunky, clunky noise when they're walking? Why do the lay people make so much noise? Why do that person who lives in the room next to me, when they get up in the morning, why do they make so much noise? Clank, clank, clank. You think there's a party going on next door. Don't even think like that. You hear a noise. How are you relating to that? How are you reacting to it? Which is why I say to make peace with it. If you have ill will towards it, you're just making a problem there. I don't want this noise. But most of the ill will comes to the feelings in the body. I don't want this pain. I don't want this ache. I don't want this itchy nose. I don't want this cold. I don't want this heat. So you make peace with whatever you're feeling in this body. You look at that feeling, that physical feeling. You look at this person who's, or this chitta which knows. And what's in between? How is it relating to this body? One of the reasons why we do body contemplation is just to see this body's got nothing to do with us. It's not me, not mine, not a self. It grows according to nature. The doctors know about this body. Actually, they don't know very much, but you know, they know roughly how it goes, cause and effect. So we can leave it all alone. It's the same, you know, the other day when we heard about Panyabhuta dying. It doesn't matter about somebody dying, that's natural, but how did you react to that? That's the important thing to watch. See if you can just make peace with it. People die all the time. Big deal. So put the attention in our reactions, and there we find where the hindrances are. And this was especially important to me, and I'll stress this again because some people are still struggling with sloth and torpor. Now, I had sloth and torpor the first few days of this retreat. It's just about disappeared now. Why? It's because I've been working so hard, doing so much, just managing this monastery, giving talks, talk to all sorts of people when they come for their problems, after lunch, when not a Mara. Sometimes people ring up, like this evening, from the Philippines, ask what about their problems. So sometimes it gets tiring. Nothing to do with me. Just nature, cause and effect. So I know that when you're tired, you get sleepy. What's the cause? It's just tiredness. You've been using your mind. You've been doing things. The more you do, the more tired you become. It's the same if you've been doing the weeding, if you've been doing your chores, if you've been cleaning up the kitchen. You expect to get tired. So you can expect that sleepiness. So please never try and control the sloth and torpor. Don't fight it with your willpower. Because you think you're destroying one thing, but actually you're enhancing something else. You're enhancing your ego, your delusion that you can control things, that you're in charge, that you have power over these things. That if you strive and struggle and work hard enough, that you can actually overcome these things. It's me, I've done it. You see, that's just all ego stuff. Don't do that. Instead, make peace with your sloth and torpor. Sloth and torpor can be unpleasant. But this is life. Sometimes it's unpleasant, sometimes it's pleasant. Physical feelings, mental feelings. As it said, this is just Vedana. Nothing to do with me. If it was mine, I could say, never be unpleasant. But you always have a fair share of pleasant and unpleasant feelings. So you have to just allow it to be. Make peace with the unpleasantness. If you make peace with the unpleasantness, make peace with the sloth and torpor, an incredible, powerful thing happens. It doesn't last very long. The hindrance of sloth and torpor comes from a tired mind, and if you fight it, you just use up the little energy you had, and you get more sleepy. If you break through sloth and torpor because of your willpower, you just emerge into restlessness. And then you calm down the restlessness, and because you've been working so hard, being restless, then you go back into sloth and torpor. I suffered with that so much with my early years, because I thought that you had to fight these things. And it was, even though that all these teachers were telling me, even Ajahn Mahabua, when he told this great story, when I went to visit him, just after my fifth rains, when I went in my Tudong years, the first thing I wanted to do was go and visit these great teachers, the great Kuba Ajahns, to go and check them out, stay with them. Not just listen to them on the tape recording or the CDs, but go and check these out, live with them, stay with them, watch them, look at them. And this is actually where I learned a lot about the forest tradition, not just Ajahn Chah's, but the old teachers. And this particular story, which again, every story you'll hear here has to be a repeat, because there's only so many stories you can have in one life. And I give a talk every Wednesday, so there's bound to be repeats. But this was the one where he called a meeting, and it was for me. I just arrived, because afterwards he asked Ajahn Panyawado to translate it for the visiting Western monk, me. Even though I was fluent in Thai, Ajahn Mahabuddha didn't realize that, because I understood perfectly what he said. And what he actually said was a story when he had malaria. And when he had malaria, this is Ajahn Mahabuddha, before he was Ajahn, there was a young monk staying with Ajahn Mun. And then he decided to fight the malaria. When it was time for the chores, he picked up his broom, and with a raging fever, probably shaking legs, he started sweeping. Now, some people might think, wow, what a courageous monk. There's a real monk, the tough guys. But as soon as Ajahn Mahabuddha saw him, he blasted him. He said, you're not a Buddhist. He called him actually a yogi, a Hindu. He said, this is what Hindus do. They fight, they try and control. And he said, as Buddhists, we contemplate. We don't fight, we don't do things. We know without doing. Now, because that was a very rare case of self-deprecation, where Ajahn Mahabuddha was putting himself down, pointing out his faults, pointing out his wrong practice, that really made a big impact on me. And I maybe just, that was one of the reasons why I started to let go more. Stop trying to fight and control these things. Because that's not just what you do when you have fevers or when you have, you know, a bad nose or whatever. This is what you do with your meditation as well. To contemplate means you just know. You make peace with it. But you don't fight it or try and make it different. If you're trying to change it, you're not contemplating anymore. You're doing something with it. To contemplate it, you have to make peace with it first and allow it to teach you without you trying to squeeze out wisdom from it. Too many people do insight practice by trying to squeeze juices out of their experiences rather than allowing the experiences to teach you. Just by being with them, being familiar with them, getting to know them until the Dharma becomes very apparent. The experience teaches you rather than you squeeze the juice out of them. So this is what we do with our meditation. Whatever we're experiencing, we just allow it to be. We make peace with it. All these different words, you know, just it's all the same, letting go, be content with whatever you're experiencing. Loving kindness, the door of my heart is open to this experience now. You know, it's all like different words, just saying the same thing, to have something in front of your mind and to leave it alone. Just to watch, to be, to know, without doing anything about it. The door of my heart's open means, you know, you don't bring people in, you don't sort of push them out, you don't close off anything, you just allow. Letting go, being content. Being content means there's no aversion, no desire. You're just allowing it to be. You're being content with sloth and torpor, even being content with restlessness. When you're restless, how many of you get frustrated? Where does that frustration come from? It's because you've got the restlessness, the mind's over there, it's running around. There's something inside knowing this, and you don't like it. Is that not liking it, not wanting it, is the fuel which keeps that restlessness going? Have you ever tried when you're meditating to stop thinking? You can't do it. Why? Because you're trying to stop thinking. You want to stop thinking. You're trying to control the thinking mind. You've heard me say this so many times, there should be alarm bells start to ring when you notice wanting, trying, controlling. That's not the path of Buddhism. That's Hinduism, what Ajahn Mun would say. The path of Dhamma is just to watch, to contemplate. So the mind is restless. Contemplate it. Make peace with it. Let it be. The door of my heart's open to you, wandering mind. If you can really do that, if you do it properly, the wandering has to stop. The sloth and torpor just vanishes pretty quickly. the mind becomes still. Remember, samadhi, the goal is stillness of mind. Don't think the goal is this beautiful nimittas or jhanas. The nimittas and the jhanas are the symptoms of the still mind. Stillness is the cause. Don't go after the symptoms, go after the cause, stillness. It's very clear, five hindrances are just the opposite of stillness. Doing things. And the first two hindrances is about, you know, so the cause of doing things, wanting this, not being, you know, worried about the body, concerned about its pleasure and pain, comfort and whatever, nice sounds, terrible sounds, all concerned with that world of wanting. And the ill will, this the aversion, I don't like this, I want something else, I'm not happy here, I want to go somewhere else. And I don't want to be meditating, I want to sort of go home. I want to sort of have something to eat. I don't want this noise. I don't want to have this terrible body. I don't want to have my friends dying in Thailand. I don't want to have this sloth and torpor. I'm bored. I want to go somewhere else. Give me something to do. I want to read a newspaper. Listen to the radio. I want to do something. Give me a book to read. All that sort of stuff is all negativity. So they can see what's happening there. You're just doing something, controlling the world. So you make peace with whatever you're experiencing. Mindfulness brings up this experience. And mindfulness also sees what's in between this knower and what you're experiencing. And this mindfulness can catch all this aversion. I don't want to hear this. Ah, there we go. Mindfulness seen. It's not the this, what you've just heard. It's just, I don't want to. You might have this tiredness in the mind. And mindfulness sees, not the tiredness, but your reaction to that tiredness. I don't want to be tired. Tiredness is nature, it's nothing to do with you. So you make peace with it. You leave it alone. You look at the mind watching the breath. It watches the breath, now it thinks a thought. Don't worry about what you're experiencing. How? Okay, make peace with that. It's just nature. It takes time for the mind to slow down. So give it time. Be patient. Patience is another way of saying letting go. Don't expect anything. Non-expectation is another beautiful way of saying letting go. Just this person wrote to me a few days ago, they asked about this beautiful word, chaga. And they said, I don't know what where the quote was from. They said, the Buddha said you should chaga, give up liberality completely, absolutely. And he was wondering, does that mean I have to give away all my possessions? What about my responsibilities to my wife? No, to my business. Does that mean as a monk you've got to give away your monastery and your bowl and give away everything? Is that what the Buddha meant by just generosity to the max? And I had to explain to him that that's not what jhaga truly means. Jhaga means giving up the will completely. The controller, the doer, the owner. Give it up completely so you don't do anything at all. Jhaga is also this liberality. And I explained it that real generosity is where you give expecting nothing back in return. You don't expect to be acknowledged. You don't expect to get some good karma back. You don't giving for getting something. That's not real giving. That's always doing business. Here I'm not talking about giving donations. I'm talking about giving your time to meditation. So you give this whole rains retreat to meditation, but do you expect something from it? Do you want to get jhanas? Do you want to get enlightened? Because if you're expecting something, that is not chaga, that's not giving, that's not renunciation. You come here to do business then. I'll come here for this 3 months and I will get jhana back. Otherwise, I want my money back. Otherwise, I want to sort of sue you. Otherwise, I just, you know, gonna... Why did I do this? I didn't get my jhanas, I didn't get my enlightenment, I didn't get this, I didn't get that. That's not real giving, liberality. That's why when I meditate, I'm very careful now not to want jhana, not to even expect jhanas. Have you ever noticed the best meditations come when they're completely unanticipated? You think that no way is it going to happen. Because I came back late last night. So I had a sleep and got up this morning. I was really tired. So I got up really early and I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to get any meditation this morning. I had a brilliant meditation today. And completely unexpected. It shouldn't have happened. I spent the whole of last night, well, not the whole of last night, but yesterday evening, going to this little talk about stupid things and being tired and, you know, traveling. It was an hour and a half there, an hour and a quarter coming back late at night with Nicholas. He did a great job. Shouldn't happen. But it's great, isn't it? The cases, the times when I think, no way am I going to get any good meditation, it happens. Why is that? Because I gave my time to the cushion. I never expected anything. So often that happens, so much so that I deliberately try not to expect anything. Give up all expectations. I just put my bum on the cushion, not expecting anything back. That's my gift. Cushion, I give you my bottom. And don't expect anything. When you give like that, I give my mind to the Buddha. I give it just to making peace, to compassion, to letting go, renouncing. I just give. But I'd never expect anything. When you don't expect, of course, that's when you let go. The hindrances just cannot withstand this complete giving, expecting nothing back in return. The sensory desire, or any desire, just is gone, it's undermined. Any ill will. Ill will comes from frustrations. You expect something, you're trying to control and it doesn't work. If you don't expect anything, how can you be disappointed? How can you have any ill will at all? Restlessness, there's no cause for restlessness anymore. You just have this beautiful contentment. This is good enough, don't expect anything. And just sloth and torpor, just you're not wasting your energy. And there's no doubt anymore. This doubt, which is again just working the mind. Thinking that if you think a lot and you figure things out, then you're going to sort of have some enlightenment. Just shut up and just do it. Stop up this disease of the Western mind. Always thinking you're going to find some truth by thinking about it a lot. That's what the problem with the theologians. They think so much. And they actually have some incredible brilliant thinking and some great logic. They get some great insights, but eventually they get the insight you can't prove anything through thought, which is an amazing sort of stupid, self-defeating conclusion. And what they're saying is we just wasted all our lives and the whole of Western philosophy has been wasted. But why couldn't they ever figure that out from the beginning like the Buddha and just shut up? Don't doubt. That's just a movement of the mind, almost like a wanting to know. Why do you want to know? It's just a discontent. It's actually the wrong type of knowing. It's not really understanding what knowing truly is. You think that knowing comes from concepts, from descriptions, from values. And that's just a waste of time. That's completely relative. So you just let all that go. And just go to this beautiful silence. And in that silence, when the mind doesn't move, there you know. And it's blissful knowing. So those five hindrances, they all lie not in what you're experiencing, but how you're experiencing it. That's why it becomes, when you understand this, it's just so easy to meditate at any time, at any place, with whatever you're experiencing. If you're sick, if you're healthy, if you're tired, you're restless, whatever's happening, you just put peace there in between you and what you're experiencing. If you're having to wash the dishes, it's not just washing the dishes. Don't put your mindfulness on your hands, feeling the plate. Put your mindfulness on how you're washing the dishes. What's your reaction to this? What's your relationship to this? Is it griping? Is it sort of ill will? Is it, this is amazing, you're getting into sensory desire, feeling these silky plates, just like the skin of a woman or whatever, I don't know what people get into. But don't get sensory desire, whatever you're doing. but what how you're doing it? When you're sort of listening to a talk, are you fantasizing? Or are you really listening? Are you fed up? What I'm saying, are you inspired? It doesn't matter I'm saying. It's just your reaction to it. That's what you should be watching. This beautiful space between the knower and the known. And once you get that pure, once you get that full of letting go, full of peace, no doer, lack of control, just peace, metta, loving kindness, freedom, this is good enough. You find that samsara starts to stop. The five hindrances are what fuel avijja. This is the fuel source, and avijja is delusion. It's the delusion which creates the sankharas, which is the karma formations. And these karma formations create the consciousness, keeps things going, and creates the world, and creates coming and going, monasteries, villages, towns and cities, aeroplanes and cars, sex and money. Everything gets created by this. All coming from these five hindrances. What's between you and the known? That's where Mara lives. Mara is this control freak. Lives in the Paranimitta Vasavati realm, the head of that realm, the realm of those who wield power of other people's creating. He's a controller in chief. That's where Mara lives. Doesn't live in what you experience. Doesn't live in the jitta. Lives in that space in between. So if you put your mindfulness there, you can see, I've caught you out. I know you, Mara. I can see you. I can see you working. I've got this tiredness, and I don't want it. That's you, Mara, trying to control. I've got this bliss, and I'm really getting into it. That's you, Mara. And I've got this expectation. There, that's you again, Mara. You can understand who Mara is by these hindrances, these defilements which lie between you and the experience. And once you sort of know, as they say in the suttas, once you see Mara, I know you, Mara, because I see your place. And then Mara can never sort of, he just, shrugs his shoulders, head drooped, shoulders drooped, saying, the monk knows me, the monk knows me, and then just goes away. It's through that seeing, in that place, that Mara is defeated. The hindrances are gone. And the Buddha said that once those hindrances are gone, it's not only just clear seeing, but there's nothing between you and the jhanas anymore. When you make that space in between the knower and the known, that pure, there's no desire, no ill will. Sloth and torpor just disappear. Restlessness, remorse, just stop. With patience, no expectations. Putting peace in this space. Says in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, these things aren't mine anyway, so nothing to do with me. You put that degree of peace there, and the world stops. When things stop, they don't stop immediately. Just like turning the fuel off a car. It just takes a while. But you know it gets slower and slower and slower. Things start to slow down. The mind doesn't move so much. So when you do this practice, be patient. You're always in the moment anyway. So you've got all the time in the world to practice. You've got the now, which is the only time in the world, and you've got all of it the more you stay in the present. In the present moment, doing nothing, putting the attention between the jitta and the known, making sure that's just so pure, no defilements going on there, no greed, no hatred, mindfulness there being means there's no delusion. Just that which you know, just disintegrates. Viraga fades away. First of all, you may be watching the body, it just disappears because you're not involved with it. When you put something down, if you really put it down, you forget it. It goes beyond your radar, as they say. And it disappears. Your body vanishes. Your breath, which you watch, vanishes. Don't watch the breath too tightly. It's a great mistake in meditators. They just think they've got to keep watching the breath. And when it disappears, they just grab onto it again. The idea of the breath is to disappear. There's this beautiful simile of the Buddha, of when King Ajatasattu went to visit him. It became the prologue to the Samanyapala Sutta, where the king went in the chariot as far as chariots can go. Then he dismounted and walked as far as he could walk. And when he came to the hall where the Buddha was sitting, he took off his sandals and then walked into the hall barefoot. You go in a chariot as far as a chariot can go. Then you go in shoes as far as the shoes can go. Then you have to take them off and go without anything at all into the place where the Buddha sits. This is what we mean by meditation. These objects of meditation, they only can take you so far. You use the breath, like the chariot, to get close to the monastery. But then you have to dismount from the breath and use the nimitta, like walking in the shoes. You use the nimitta as far as the nimitta can go. But to get to a place where the Buddha sits, into the jhanas, you've got to take the nimitta off and go in with nothing at all. It's a beautiful simile. And this is how we do it. We're just taking things off. So you put your peace, emptiness, not doing things between you and that breath, you and that nimitta. If you've got a nimitta coming up, don't just watch the nimitta. How are you watching the nimitta? What's between this knower and the nimitta? That's paramount. If you're going to take the nimitta to its destination. If you're just holding on to that nimitta, at last I've got a nimitta and so afraid to let it go, because now I've got one, I don't want it to go. I want to develop it. It's just so rare all this time. It will go straight away. You've blown it, stupid. The nimitta comes, why has it come? Where did it come from? It came from stillness. So just keep a watch on that area between you and the nimitta to make sure you don't do anything to disturb the whole process. Don't stuff up now. You're at the doorway. Just leave it alone. You put peace there until it becomes just a natural inclination, or just a natural way you meditate. You just sit there and just give completely, expecting nothing, putting peace in there, until that just becomes a way you meditate. What your object of meditation is, it's interesting, but it's not paramount, not important. The way you meditate, that's important. You meditate for abandoning, not for getting things. What do you abandon? The hindrances. The doing. The wanting, the expecting, the irritation, the frustration. All of that, that's what you abandon. If you practice like that, it won't be long. You get beautiful nimittas coming up. It won't be long. You get these incredible, powerful jhanas. And then you come and see me and say, Ajahn Brahm, at last. And you make me a very happy teacher. And then after you get those jhanas, you look back. How did it work? Why did it work? Why did you get this incredible, powerful, blissful Uttari Manusa Dhamma, what the Buddha praised, what's always in the suttas, and you read about it, and what these Kupa Rajans always just put up there is really important. How did it work? Letting go. Letting go of craving, letting go of hindrances, letting go of all this sort of stuff. Just look at the Four Noble Truths, and there it's all there, black and white. Ha, now I know what it means. Look at the asavas, these outflowings of the mind. How did the mind go out? Because you made it go out. You put something in there in between. You spoiled. Isn't what kalesa means? You defile that space between you and what you're experiencing. You've dirtied it. You put muck in there. So that's the place you have to look. And if you look in there and understand what I'm saying, and it work, and it, you take it to heart, you practice that way, no long times, it says in the suttas, and no long time. What is it? Diligent, secluded, they gain the goal for which men and women of good families go forth. And there's another Aryan in the world. Who knows, maybe another Arahat in the world as well. And that's you. Because you follow the instructions and you've been sharp. So this is where you put your mindfulness. That's where the hindrances live. They don't live in the object. They don't live in the jitta. They live between. Relationship. Please see that. It's a great paradigm, a great way of looking at things. It works. It means that you have the key to get jhanas, and the jhanas are the key to get enlightened. So that's the talk for this evening.
Pano Bhagavato Sāma.